Oh, are you? Do you have some questions for Mort? I mean, this is a guy that's got all. He started it all. I was at the Friars Club last night, and some guy said something to me. He comes up to me. I told him Mort Saul was coming on the program, and the guy says, "You know, it's because of Mort Saul that we can wear whatever we want on stage."
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to him about that. I had no idea, but that was one. You know, some people remember jokes, some people remember performances, but that guy was like, "I can dress like however. I can wear this dirty shirt if I want." Because of Mort Saul.
My parents saw him in San Francisco in the like 65 or whatever I believe. But they say the Purple Onion.
And how did they enjoy it?
Yes.
I pulled out my old Mort Saul records. Hey, I got to ask him about the CD availability, man. Because I can only get one CD of Mort's on iTunes, and there's one available over at Laugh.com. The one on iTunes is like from 73. I listened to that yesterday, but I've actually got two or three of the records, and he's got like six or seven or eight records. A lot of records out. I mean, the weird thing is I guess I'm going to have to tell him, I kind of ripped off the artwork of one of the covers from my newest CD. It's more of a homage, really. I don't want to look at it as stealing. Appropriating, you know, time travel, I like to call it. So we're going to have him out here. I'm looking forward to talking to Mort. And also, a little later in the show, we'll talk about so many important things we've got planned. We're going to do, we have the obits. Mort Mortensen is going to do the obituary, as we like to do. So stay tuned, folks. We've got comic legend Mort Saul in the wings.
Live from Burbank, California, where Masons live in underground caves, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he doesn't get enough salt. Mark Maron.
That's probably true. Thank you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, working conservatives. We're back. Very excited about this hour of our show. We're going to have Lawton Smalls calling in just a little while. But right now, as I said before, I believe that there is a difference between a comedian and a stand-up comic. As I said before, I will answer to both, but I prefer to be called a stand-up because that's what it means to me, to stand up against something, to speak your mind, to speak the truth. That differentiation came out of the late 50s and early 60s when comics were at the cutting edge of cultural commentary and first starting to push the edge of the First Amendment and redefining what could and couldn't be said in public. Initially, it happened in jazz clubs, and one of the first true stand-up comics, I believe, is with us today. Welcome to the show, Mort Saul. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Mark.
Hey, so now jazz, we were talking a little bit about jazz before you came on.
Yeah.
Jazz, why did stand-up really, as we know stand-up to be, is what I'm calling stand-up, start in jazz clubs?
Because musicians encourage nonconformity. They'll never tell you to fit in. If you're doing something the audience wouldn't accept, they'll tell you to keep doing it.
Yeah.
They're brave. They break ground that way. And then when I got in a position where I fortunately could hire the show, I brought the music in with me.
So in terms of like the idea, certainly at that time, you know, jazz exploration and improvisation was just starting to happen as well. So they were able to appreciate what you were doing in terms of taking risks out there with comedy.
Also grew up with a generation that developed that taste, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody knew what Ellington was doing, and Kenton and Woody Herman, and I worked with Brubeck extensively in a modern jazz quartet.
Now, how were you looked upon at that time? Because it seems to me that even now, even with the type of comedy I've done in my life, that there is a difference between a comedian and a stand-up comic. Was there a difference between you and the culture of Hollywood in terms of comedians? How'd you get along with those guys? You know, Jackie Vernon, some of the other cats, Jackie Gale, some of the people that maybe were kicking around the scene then.
Well, you can't confuse people. It's the chronology that confuses you.
Okay.
They were around at the same age, but they're not, you know, everybody's a comedian now. I mean, that's what they claim.
Right.
But, you know, Woody Allen put it succinctly. He says, you can prowl a stage with a microphone, and you can curse, and you can rant, but when it comes to being funny, that's the hard part. So, unquote.
So how do you define it then? I mean, how would you define the responsibility or the task of a comedian?
Tell the truth and keep it funny.
Right. That's pretty much it. Now, in terms of when you were starting out, because it seems to me that did you feel like you were doing something that was forbidden, something that was taboo? Did you feel like that you were pushing the cultural buttons? No.
I just wanted to do that, and people weren't doing it, and that was enough reason for people to turn you away. So I just stuck with it, mm-hmm. and eventually. We won a few people over, but I was in San Francisco, which was a pretty good crucible.
Now, a lot of people will sort of put you and Lenny Bruce around the same time, and you guys knew each other.
Very well.
But you clearly were taking different approaches. And I guess my question, as somebody who was listening to both of you, as a student of comedy, is that what was your relationship, and who really inspired who at that time? Because as I was listening to the other day.
We're just real good friends.
Yeah, that was it? And so everyone was just
He was apolitical.
Right. That's what I wanted to know.
And he was not profound. That's the truth of it. I mean, the people that quote him, they use him as a metaphor for the axe they're grinding. In other words, if you stick your neck out and you get decapitated, that means that their cowardice can be interpreted as prudence.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they try to make him into Jesus.
Right.
He'd be laughing at all this.
Really?
He liked chicks and he liked music, and he didn't dwell on the culture much.
Well, that was what was interesting when I was listening to some of your stuff yesterday, is that I knew that Woody Allen was really Lenny Bruce, before he became what is known as Lenny Bruce, was a mimic. He was
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, and so I think it seems to me that you were actually probably the guy that put it in his craw that it was time to talk about politics.
Well, I grew up around it. You know, it depends what your parents talk about at dinner.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you grew up with? Did you grow up what kind of political...
Just like the Kennedys. You know, my old man talked about it, and he aroused my curiosity, and I read about it. And it wasn't a dilettante approach. We had real politics because we were poor.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what kind of, was that primarily, were they sort of old school, FDRites, or what were they?
Yeah, but they were free thinkers mainly.
Okay.
Real radical free thinkers. I mean, people went to the library to get the magazines they couldn't afford to buy, you know.
It seems to me that, go ahead.
The parents shaped the kid.
Sure.
He's listening.
Yep, that's true. It seems to me that now, as I was listening, I actually listened yesterday to a 1973 recording of you talking about, I guess that was almost you really came to your fame during Eisenhower and Kennedy?
Well, it kind of, the breakthrough in San Francisco, you know, by that time, I was actually writing for Kennedy.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. Now, how does that happen? How are you able to have an alignment with the presidency and with the press that you did at the time with Kennedy and Nixon, and still have the distance enough to actually take them to task?
The old man hired me. Ambassador Kennedy hired me.
Joe Kennedy did.
Yeah, because I was doing all these jokes about Nixon, but I exercised my right to criticize whoever got the job.
Uh-huh.
That's what my job is. So, in other words, even though he was the new sheriff in town, I'm still a bank robber by trade.
Okay.
And you do that with all of them, and it seems to get easier. I was going to ask you a question. Is that legal on the show?
What? Sure. Absolutely.
How did you get hooked up with this network?
I'll tell you, honestly, it's interesting you ask that, because I've been a stand-up for 20-some-odd years. I was out here. I just moved to Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just moved to Los Angeles. I was doing a TV script for a network that didn't go anywhere. And I had nothing to do, and I heard about Air America. So I called Janine Garofalo, who I've known for years, and I said, look, I want to help take this bastard down. How do I get involved with this network? And I had never done radio before, and she gave me the name, and through a series of auditions, I got involved.
Yeah, I did her show in New York, you know, 2 years ago.
Uh-huh. How'd it go?
I did the show.
You like her?
Well, it was pretty serious, I have to tell you. it was also, you know, I thought it would have been great if she'd taken some calls.
Yeah. And she didn't take any calls with you?
No, she said to me, we're not equipped for that.
Really? Yeah. I wonder when that was because they...
That was in the New York building down there on 34th Street.
Right, so that was the old studio.
I was doing the Village Theater then.
That must have been close to the beginning of the game. So let me ask you a couple questions about the administration that you were like in this talk that you did. I heard about Nixon. It seems to me that some of the tag phrases that were in the culture now, referring to conservatives and referring to the Nixon administration, all that stuff holds true now. And some of these guys are the same guys. I mean, how do you feel?
Yeah, of course it does.
And what do you think in comparing this administration to Nixon administration? It seems like this is a little worse.
Well, both sides, as if there were two sides. there's a moral imperative with people. They're always telling you, the president does bad things because he's a bad guy, and they wouldn't do that. But that reminds me of all those people who said, my parents only care about money.
Yeah.
Then they come out of college and they care about money.
Yeah.
So, the idea is not just that it can be done better or introducing any humanity. The idea is to focus on one guy. Like, you saw the 60 Minutes Sunday?
Yeah.
Well, a guy comes out from the CIA and attacks the president, which gives them a clean bill of health.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't hear Ed Bradley say to him, wait a minute, you fellas, you were in the archives. You removed what you wanted to. I wouldn't do it that way, or he doesn't have to. I would try to do it humorously because it's shorthand to be able to do it humorously. In other words, if a guy says to you, is President Bush like his father? It's quicker to say, yes, the apple doesn't rot far from the tree.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you're going to be performing at the Steinway Hall, where Jim and I performed not too long ago.
So I understand.
That's right. Mort Sahl's America, that's Saturday, April 29th at 7 o'clock and 9:15. It's a $35 ticket charge, $25 if you mention that you heard it here. and that of course, is I won't give you the whole address. I will give you the number to call to make reservations, 310-471-3979 to see Mort Sahl Saturday, April 29th for two shows, 7 o'clock and 9:15. 310-471-3979. Mention the Mark Maron show and she'll cut you a deal. That's at Fields Pianos. That's 12121 West Pico Boulevard. I'll put this up on the website. We'll try to get a link to that so you can go see Mort. You're going to stay with us a few more minutes. Is that okay?
Sure, Mark.
Okay. Talking to comic legend Mort Sahl on the Mark Maron Show. Stay with us.
And now back to Patient Zero for mumps, Mark Maron.
We're talking to Mort Sahl. 310-471-3979 is the number to call for reservations if you'd like to go see him. Saturday, April 29th, 7 o'clock or 9:15. Mort, I tell you, it is a privilege to have you here. And I was talking about my latest CD. I only have two CDs out. And I'll show you the cover. I didn't bring one with me, but I was very inspired by the covers of a couple of your records where you just had the sketch of your head. And then the title. And there was a style back then, and I kind of lifted that style
David
a little
Stone
bit.
David Martin.
Is that the guy's name?
He did all that stuff for Norman Granz.
Okay.
And then they later transferred over to Sinatra to Reprise.
Right, that's the guy. Right. I tried to capture that feel. I didn't quite get that kind of feel, but
great.
It was similar. Yeah, it was great.
But, the Norman Granz, that's the kind of culture that's gone. There's a guy that, knew Picasso and sat down with Fred Astaire and dreamed up Funny Face.
Right.
Over dinner. I mean,
yeah.
they They were very plugged in guys.
Now, now let's talk about that a minute, because I think that's an interesting thing that you hit on, is that I was born in 63, so I missed a good deal of what was, there was a great alignment between artists and writers and creative people in music and entertainment that seemed to have mythic proportions, because I think it defined what those businesses and what those forms of expression were capable of. And now it seems that everything has just become a pop culture reference and that there is no real integrity to things
anymore. Yeah, I know. I just did a concert in the Chicago with Dick Gregory.
Uh-huh.
We worked for a few days together there. And I come back, and a bunch of rap people are coming off the plane with necklaces and giving $100 tips to sky caps and getting into limos. And they're saying, it is what it is. Of course, the problem is it isn't even that. But,
that?
But I didn't take them on. And then this guy next to me, who must have been a liberal, said to me, well, they've been empowered, black artists. Actually, they've been disempowered, because they used to be a political force before the chicken dancing in the end zone on Monday night vaudeville on Channel 7.
Well, that's interesting. So what you're saying is that you feel that at the time that you came out, so at the time you were coming up, certainly in terms of the civil rights movement and in terms of what was going on culturally with the black community in terms of jazz and also in terms of politics, that do you see that there is a real difference between now and then? Because it seems to me that there is some political momentum and some of these kids are doing things that are provocative and modern. Are we just being old, do you think?
Black people have been depoliticized.
By?
They've been diverted.
Okay. By who?
Giving them sports figures as heroes and giving them, allowing nothing for education from the federal government so that people want to join the army to learn to run a computer.
Right. No, that's the fix.
They've been depoliticized. Then you mix into that the Fox Network discrediting Jesse Jackson.
Oh, sure. Any chance they get.
You know, and
it's interesting now, Mort, that it seems that this administration is funneling money into these faith-based initiatives, primarily to buy out black ministers to appropriate their congregations into the Republican Party, which I don't think is going to be successful. I can't see how black Americans could ever become Republicans.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, they could.
You think so?
It's a theocracy anyway.
Yes, we are moving towards that. There's no doubt about that. You feel like we're in it already.
Or what do my friends say to me? They say, why do those Arabs hate us? And somebody always says, because we're free.
Yeah. You don't buy it.
It's easier to join up.
Mm-hmm.
It seems easier at the time. It's actually more expensive.
The interesting thing that I found with a lot of your stuff is that unlike completely slandering a politician or a pop icon, you seem to use the technique of humanizing them first and letting that humanization take them down naturally.
Yeah, and if I worked for anybody, the first thing I would do is humanize them by kidding themselves. You can practice damage control that way. By the way, do you notice, Mark, that there are no current political figures with any sense of humor?
Well,
doesn't mean they have to laugh at what you and I laugh at.
I get you.
But anything.
Yeah, some people think that Bush is funny. Then there's about 31% of the country, but they seem to be.
But the last guy with a sense of humor was probably Reagan.
Right.
In office.
He was a real showman. I mean, he was an entertainer.
And he knew some great stories.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know, in terms of what people can expect from the show on Saturday the 29th, Mort, what are you going to be covering? Just most of the stuff that's going on today?
Politics, or movies, and women. All the crucial areas.
The big three. The important things. I hear you. I thought it was a very funny line. I don't know when you wrote it about Botox on your website. That was I don't know why that one stood out to me. That you said that because of Botox, there's so much Botox around now, you can't tell when a Jewish girl is angry.
Yeah, we'll see. Because of the professional liberals.
Yeah.
Of course, they would frown at that joke.
Yeah.
But their basic premise is that there's only one gender.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the premise of politically correctness has done a great deal of damage.
Jane Fonda has now become a Christian.
Yeah.
She was a liberal.
Yeah.
But so the Christian part of me forgives her.
Okay. Mort Saul, it was great talking to you. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to I'm going to be working that night, but I will definitely hear about your show. You take care. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for the help, Mark.
You bet.